And hello, friends. Greg Kokel here, Stand to Reason, and I welcome you to the show. Always glad that you've chosen to spend some time with me. And this hour, you get to spend some time with one of my buddies, Mr. Tim Barnett.
Who's that?
It is our attempt at cheap multiculturalism here. To have our Canadian brother...
Cheap? I don't know how to take that.
Well, no, what I mean is it's a cheap attempt.
Okay.
It's not like a cheap cultural representation
okay.
here. But now that you mention that...
Yeah, okay. Here we go.
You open the door.
We didn't even get 1 minute into the show.
Well, you're actually pretty close. You're just across the lake from the real America.
I am as
right?
close as I want to be.
Okay, so Tim's one of our speakers, one of our young guns here at Stand to Reason, and he hails from Toronto.
That's right.
And that would be just across the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And would that be Lake Erie, or is that...
Here we go.
You don't know the lake that your city
well,
is
there's,
on?
Well, there's...
But you're only on one lake.
Sure. There's a whole lot of the Great Lakes are all in, around where we are.
So. Listen to that. There's so many Great Lakes in the Midwest.
That's what they call
I don't know which one I live on, right?
Well,
is that
Lake
what you're telling me?
Yeah. Lake Ontario's right there, yeah.
Is that Lake Ontario that the Toronto sits on the shores of?
Well, now you put me in a little bit of a pickle because I got to go back to my geography lesson here.
But you live in Toronto.
Sure, yeah. So there's Lake Ontario.
I grew up in Chicago.
That's right.
Lake Michigan.
Okay.
I happen to know that Chicago is on the shores of Lake Michigan.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, Toronto is right next to Lake Ontario.
Okay, yeah. So that, I mean, it's on the shores.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Okay.
That's right.
Because if you drive around, then you can go to, like, where the Niagara Falls and all that other
That's
stuff, right?
Right?
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
so, okay, all right. Well, I got my geography right here. Glad to have you aboard, Tim. And
glad to be here.
How long, you know, I don't know how many people know the story. We've talked about it before, and I won't tell the whole thing, but through a couple of set of circumstances, we got wind of your capabilities as a communicator and as an apologist and kind of being a little bit of an offspring north of the border,
well,
Stand to Reason.
That's right. I've been following you guys, Stand to Reason, for some time, and I was using a lot of your material. And so I had created some talks. I had actually put together a tactics talk, an atheist role play. You know, I was trying to do the Sean McDowell, Brett Kunkel thing. there was a number of talks that I put together, a truth talk using the ice cream versus insulin. And you know what? I had those videos online. So when Brett Kunkel originally sent me an email, I was a little nervous that he was going to say, stop using our stuff, you know? Well, it turned out he was inviting me to speak at a Rethink event.
Which email you received? It was an email, not a phone call.
It was an email
originally.
On the first
day of April.
That's right.
Which would be, in America at least.
April Fool's Day.
April
it's the
Fool's
same
day.
In Canada.
The same in
and
Canada.
So I was a little nervous that this wasn't legit, that... Maybe my brother or someone had, you know, was pulling my leg. And I actually went online and looked up the, actually the original, before I got the email, there was a text message. And I checked the phone number of the text message and it was from California.
And so it wasn't one of your buddies in Ontario.
It wasn't. This was legit. This was coming from out here somewhere. And it turned out, yeah, it was really Brett Kunkel. And
so
I was...
Brett invited you down to Orange County when we were at our first venue before Calvary Chapel.
That's right.
Before we really exploded. We reached about, I think that was the last time at that first venue. You came to speak for us. And that church was filled to the gills. I would say like 900 people standing room
only. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it was great. And so then I sat in the front row. I didn't do that on purpose to make you nervous, but...
Now, people need to realize here, at this point, I had spoken to groups of 30, 40 people, you know, some churches, maybe 100 or so. And I've got, and of course, I'm trying to mimic Greg Kokel and Alan Schliemann and Brett Kunkel and all these guys who I think are superstars. And of course, Greg Kokel sits front row. I was already sweating, you know, a crowd of 1,000 students.
And my daughter was sitting next to me.
That's right.
Yeah. But, you know, honestly, you couldn't tell. You were just, you executed so magnificently and professionally. And you had trouble with
the clicker situation.
Clicker situation and all that. But you were great. And that's when I thought, he's one of us. Plus, I've heard that material before, you know, and that joke, that sounds familiar. So he is one of us. And incidentally, for those listening in, this is exactly the kind of thing we want to do. If we have had an influence on you and a salutary influence, mm-hmm. and you have some opportunity, some capability, some gift, some platform, some exposure where you can pass it on, pay it forward, go ahead and do it. I have often said, kind of jokingly, but you get the spirit of it, steal my talks. Go ahead and take the outlines. That's why we include them a lot of times in the materials we sell. Take the outlines. Take the concepts. Take the jokes. It's all right with me. I took them from somebody else, for goodness sake, you know. And then use that, pay it forward, make your own impact. And in this case, Tim was doing that. And actually, you had a little enterprise up there with a name.
I called my organization, if we can even call it that, Clear Thinking Christianity.
Yes.
And that is an expression used on the show. It was on the bottom of this solid grounds in the mentoring letters. It's on the, it's in the room right here. I'm reading Clear Thinking Christianity all over. Yeah. So
I have noticed that. You're right.
So and that was a kind of a compliment to what you guys had done in the
And it was.
You've
I
had.
Was flattered to hear that too.
Yeah.
And of course it all fits so well. And now now you've been on the team officially
almost 3 years.
Really?
In May, yeah.
And it started with that Rethink, and then and now of course you've been a feature, one of the young guns. With this old gun, you know.
still learning.
All our
still
rethinks.
Learning.
Incidentally, I just found out the rethink coming up in, is it 2 weeks from this
week? Two and a half weeks, something like that.
March 2nd and 3rd, yeah. So
in
that
Dallas.
Would be 2 weeks from Friday in Dallas, Cottonwood Creek Church. We have 900 people almost that are pre-signed.
This is so awesome.
That's 100 more than we've ever had at the Dallas seminar in the past, and part of the reason is we held it in the fall, which is a big mistake because we're competing with
football.
Bad move if you're in Texas. So we.
If you're in
this
Canada,
break.
Though, no problem. No, you can come any season.
You play football with ice skates in Canada, so it's a whole different kind of animal.
There you go.
But so that's coming up, and he'll, of course, Tim will be speaking, and Alan Schlaman and me and J. Warner Wallace and Walter Strickland and Christopher Yuan will be there, John Stone Street, Amy Hall. I mean, we got a great turnout. So if you want information just about Rethink Apologetics in Dallas, North Dallas, just go to rethinkapologetics.com and you have all the information. You can sign up. And you can sign up in advance. It's always a good idea to do it because we can anticipate them better. No discount. I don't think there's any further discount. There's no early bird discount, but it's going to be cheaper than signing up at the door,
right?
So you can save a few bucks that way. And we've had whole youth groups that come to this, and more this kind of thing is happening. People are making road trips, and
They're seeing what we're offering at these conferences. I don't want to toot our own horn here, but
that's
this,
okay. You can do this. Okay. This is called Stand to Reason Show. Toot away.
There is. I mean, we travel around. There's nothing like this kind of conference that's being offered. And I think that's why we're starting to get, 900 students in Cottonwood. And, we haven't done this event in Cottonwood before. And yet the students are seeing that.
There's excitement. There's momentum.
You're getting some of the best speakers who can communicate to young people.
Right.
And it's not all about just the academic side of it. We have a lot of fun. There's a lot of laughs. I mean,
usually they entail embarrassing Mr. Kokel.
Yeah.
Or at least something I have to do that's embarrassing.
And there will be more of that. Guaranteed. But top-notch speakers, and then we've got, a guy like Drew Worsham, and he's an illusionist.
He is unbelievable.
He really is. The guy is...
He did a thing on the side with my daughter, who was 9 years old at the time, and he said to her something like this. I mean, this is mental. I mean, really. It's scary.
Yeah.
He said, write down the name on a piece of paper of somebody that's close to you. And she wrote the name down and folded it up. And then he does his little deal. And then he, I don't know how exactly all the details, but he ends up pulling out of his own pocket a piece of paper. And it had
the same name on it.
The same name, which was my daughter's birth mom's first name.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
I honestly,
I'm mad. I got my Pentecostal brothers out. We're gonna cast this demon out of this guy, man. No, but it was really, it was great. And of course, he does these things with the audience and audience members.
That's right.
It's unbelievable,
jaw dropping stuff.
But it's all he knows. It's a trick. He acknowledges it.
In fact, this is part of what he describes when he's on stage. He talks about how your worldview can be mistaken. Your worldview can be, you can be deceived in what you, without even really even noticing how you're being deceived. And that's what he shows us. He, in fact, he reveals how he does some of his tricks on stage, which, I mean, I love that.
I missed that part.
Oh, no.
I want to find out how he did.
Okay.
I know there's some psychology stuff involving it, but I got to pay attention this time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sometimes I'm distracted because I'm running back and forth, whatever.
Sure.
So I've got to check this out.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's Drew Worsham. And so this just underscores the notion that we like to have fun. And
it's entertaining, but if you come, you're getting an education.
Yeah. And that's just, look, we've been doing, we had Dallas. We've got the following month, Briarwood Presbyterian Church again in Birmingham last year. 1,600 showed up number first icebreaker there. And that'll be April 20th to the 21st. Pretty much a very similar lineup, I think, what we're doing there.
Yeah.
And so if that's your neck of the woods, you can do that. I know we usually have, and I should do a tally of this, but I think we have, if memory serves me, anecdotally here, roughly 15 states, not counting other countries, and sometimes that's in play.
Yeah.
15 states are represented at any given rethink, whether it's Southern California or Dallas or Birmingham. People come from all over.
That's right.
Now, we are hoping to open up something in the upper Midwest, maybe Detroit area, and we're Pacific Northwest. I mean, I'm thinking strategically and also Eastern Seaboard somewhere. But these are we're not going to have a gazillion of these, but we want to have manageable number for us as one of the things that we do to help train the next generation, which, as many have heard me say, the most important generation is always
the next generation.
Thank you. The next generation. Yeah. See, he listens. good man. So let's, what's been going on with you? I know that sometimes people like to hear from the field and whatever. And
it's been busy. Although last week I was in Jamaica. Did you know that?
I did know
did
that.
Did you see my, you notice the tan? You noticed?
I did not notice that. Because I need to see you compared
before and after.
No, compared to Toronto folk.
Oh, okay.
Not compared to Southern California folk.
Yeah.
You're down here.
Yeah.
So you look kind of normal.
You're 50 shades darker than I am. That's not
a great
expression.
That
okay, good.
I have nothing to do with that.
Okay.
I know folks, when you go home, they're going to say, oh my gosh, you got a tan.
Because even then, they look
white.
At me. Yeah. How was the people? We got back. Oh, so it didn't have very good weather. No, the weather was fantastic. We just used suntan lotion. We just used sunscreen, right? And if people follow me on Facebook or Instagram, they would see my family. And my three little girls are as beautiful as it gets, but they are as white as your T-shirt, okay? And they need a ton of sunscreen. And my wife's the same way.
Well, they probably need some vitamin D, too.
You know what? It's a win if no one gets burnt. And that was, so it was a win this time.
Okay. So the most important thing about Jamaica was not the sun.
No.
Okay. The beaches. What did you do when you're down in Jamaica?
You know what? We've been to a few different places, a few different islands, and this beach was absolutely beautiful.
Oh, this was a holiday.
Yeah, this was a holiday.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't working.
Oh, I thought.
Okay, you want to hear about me working? All right. Well,
no, that's okay. But I actually thought, Alan last two weeks in Australia.
That's right.
And working really hard. Yeah. And I was here working really hard. And the rest of the people were around the country working really hard. And so you were in Jamaica
vacation,
sitting on the beach.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you deserve it because
here
all
we go.
The rest of the time you work really hard.
That's right. So, I just started writing some stuff down on the places we've been. And it turns, we've been doing a lot of stuff with students.
Mm-hmm.
And so right after the new year, January 2nd, 3rd, got right to work, went to Metrolina Christian Academy. And they had Brett last year.
Where are they at?
They're in North Carolina.
Okay, so in the States.
Huge Christian school. Mm-hmm. I think there was 800 students, something
wow,
like that.
Yeah.
You know, it was just awesome to be ministering to these students. Did why I'm a Christian. We did the Heavens Declare the Glory of God. You know, mm-hmm. that's always fun to talk
yeah.
about. Went to First Baptist in Denton. And we did a Discipleship Now conference, and they had me do the Atheist
That would
role
be Denton, Texas?
You got it, yeah.
Right. I think we've done a lot of things with that.
And great group of people. They're coming to Dallas Rethink. They're mm-hmm. excited about that. We did the Atheist role play with the students. They didn't know I was a Christian.
Oh,
and,
that's
oh,
great.
My, this is so much fun. For me. And
so just for people who may not know what this is,
sure.
This is where, in this case, Tim would show up and be introduced as an atheist.
That's right.
Okay.
And I'm a friendly atheist.
Yeah.
I got a smile on my face.
Right. Which are the most persuasive kind.
They really are. And so yeah. we're trying to make our arguments as persuasively as the atheist would.
Right.
And I think being the nice atheist is more persuasive. So,
And then when you get introduced, of course, the chill goes up everybody's spine. They said, who let that guy
yeah,
in here?
Yeah, exactly. And so most of the leaders knew, because this event had a number of different youth groups coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And so different youth pastors and helpers. And so we ended up...
So you do a little pitch?
I do a little... 20 minutes of just arguments from, you know... I'm an atheist, but you're all atheists too with respect to all those gods, you know, kind of the,
yeah.
I just believe in one less god than
right,
you.
Right.
Give him that one. Well, I don't like being called an atheist because it's really just a lack of belief, and no
uh-huh.
one calls you a Santa-ist or a Thor-ist, you know, and so why call me an atheist? It's a default position, you know, that kind of argument. I say, well, you're just, how many people are Christians here? Well, you're just a Christian because of where you were born.
Right.
You know, 70% of the people in the U.S. are claim to be Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you were born in Hindu, you'd be in if you were in India, you'd be a Hindu. If you were born in Iraq,
you'd be in India. I got it.
You meant what I knew. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And then we walk through the science thing, you know, you believe in a God of the gaps, the problem of evil.
Right.
You know, how can you believe in a God who's all loving and all powerful?
Okay. So then you leave it open for Q&A afterwards.
Yeah, it's just one thing after another. And the Trinity is incoherent. You know, you believe that three gods are one God. And you believe that, and we just go on and on like this. And then I just open it up. Any questions, comments, concerns? And at first, you know, the students aren't always quick to throw a hand up because, like, I don't want to be the first one. But once you get the ball rolling,
alive, right.
Yeah, once the ball gets rolling, these kids were jumping out of their seats, like hands up, trying to get my attention so they could ask their question.
Now, was this particular place a place of students that had already had some apologetics training, or was this completely new to them and they just didn't know how to respond? And
knowing the youth pastors, I can say they had some apologetics training.
Did it show up, though, in their interaction with
you? You know what? For some of them, there were some great comments about, yeah. you know, how can I even make a moral claim when I'm an atheist? This
yeah,
kind of thing. So,
right.
that, you know, that kind of challenge, and I'm cheering on the inside, of
yeah.
course. I'm going to come back to them, and I confuse things a little bit. Well, I can know right and wrong
yeah.
and be an atheist. You
right.
know, that kind of confusing epistemology yeah. with ontology,
sure.
Which happens quite a bit
of course.
In
yeah.
these kind of discussions. And, you know, we've talked about evolution. Now, so you get a mix. You get some comments that are just unproductive. What I like to point out afterwards, so then I reveal that I'm a Christian, and there's a sigh over the entire room, you know, and because before that, you can cut the tension.
Yeah. To them, really, their faith is on the line. You're raising all these issues they don't know how to deal with, and they have
yeah.
this oog feeling inside, like maybe I'm wrong, and oh
yeah.
my gosh, and who invited him kind of thing.
We got that. There was
yeah.
a number of leaders who didn't know that I was a Christian. And they went to talk to the pastor, as I'm up there, what are you doing?
But let me offer a thought on that. We got to go to break in
sure.
a second. But let me thought on that. Let's just say you really were an atheist.
Yeah.
You were not a Christian, and you offered your same thing. Why is that a problem? Think about it. Every single one of these kids is going to leave that church
That's right.
and going to face people like that atheist. And better they face it in an environment where they can begin to deal with it, even if you were completely legit as an atheist.
That's right.
Then protect them from that and then flush them out into the culture where they can get gobbled up while they're all alone.
And that is the motivation for why we do this.
Yeah.
We don't want them to hear a single argument out there that they haven't heard first in the safety of our churches or Christian school classrooms or whatever.
That's the inoculation concept.
That's right. We're inoculating. And that entails us raising these challenges as persuasively as we can.
Yeah.
And we're not doing any service to our students if we just ignore these challenges.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to face them one way or the other. And most of the time, they've heard these challenges either on YouTube or on, you know, as a meme that comes up on their Facebook feed or whatever social media platform they're
mm-hmm.
on. So we're a little naive to think, well, you know, let's just leave it till they get to university. No, they're confronted by these ideas mm-hmm. much earlier than we think.
When we come back here, I want to take a break and then I want to ask you if you'd seen the YouTube about the street epistemology guy and the Christian. I don't know. I'll bring that up.
You
know, I'll give you a little more detail. Greg Kokel here on Stand to Reason. Back in a moment.
The Apostle Paul knew well the effect on those who engaged in empty chatter as they spread the virus of false knowledge. They went astray. So while entrusting the treasure of truth to Timothy, his disciple, and encouraging Timothy to entrust it to other faithful men, Paul also exhorted him to guard the treasure in 2 Timothy 1:14. Paul's word guard comes from the activity or office of a watchman who has the job of protecting those who are asleep from harm. It implies a deliberate, conscious act and demands discernment in knowing what it is that's been placed under our care. Guard the treasure was Paul's final message to Timothy before Paul's death. It reflected the heartbeat of his ministry. It reflects the heartbeat of Stand to Reason, too. Guard the treasure which has been entrusted to you. To learn more about Stand to Reason and how we're training Christian ambassadors to guard the treasure, visit us at str.org. Our website is full of unique and useful resources to train you to be an effective ambassador for Christ. That's str.org.
Do you have a friend, family member, or coworker who identifies as gay or lesbian? Or do you find yourself in conversations about the topic of homosexuality and want to make a productive contribution? Well, if you're either of these people, chances are you're wondering how to navigate those conversations and how to navigate those relationships in a healthy way, but without compromising your convictions. Well, I want to tell you about a new resource I've made called The Truth About Homosexuality, A Compassionate Response. And it's a DVD that includes the most comprehensive presentation of my teaching on this topic that I've ever presented. In this DVD resource, I'll present the truth about what Scripture and science says about this topic of homosexuality, but also show you how to communicate it in a persuasive yet winsome and gracious manner. So I hope you'll consider this resource to help you elevate your understanding of this topic and make your conversations with friends and family who identify as gay or lesbian to become more Christ-like.
All right, back at you. Greg Kokel here, Stand to Reason, and Standing to Reason with my buddy Tim Barnett and colleague here at STR. And we're talking about your atheist role play, and kind of we were pursuing the idea, developing the whole notion that kids need to have these kinds of challenges in a more protected environment. And too bad that there are some youth leaders that are saying, what are you doing exposing an atheist to our kids? When it turns out you were just role-playing and you revealed that, became a training opportunity. But even if you were an atheist, you still, I mean, this is what they need. They need to know. This is what J. Warner Wallace calls the test.
Yeah.
They got to be tested first before they know what they don't know.
That's right.
To be trained to be able to face this thing in the future. That's kind of what we're talking about.
And as a youth, if there's youth pastors listening or parents listening, one of the things that when I was a teacher full time before coming on with Stand to Reason, one of the things we would do is do diagnostic assessments to see where our students were at. What do they know? So when I'm teaching grade 10, 10th grade, what do they call that here?
Yeah.
Junior, is that?
Grade 10.
Okay.
In California, West Coast they do. On the East Coast they have
other
thing, yeah.
Yeah. So I want to know what they learned from in grade 9,
Ten
the year before.
Actually,
yeah. So what did they learn the year before? So a diagnostic assessment. So when we come in to the, you know, into the youth group and we do our role play, I'm getting a feel. Do they understand the Trinity? Do they understand the relationship between science and faith, what mm-hmm. faith really is,
yeah.
what basic terms like atheism and agnosticism and theism, do they understand those concepts?
Yeah.
And so as you're working through, and anyone can do this, you know, isn't it just Sean McDowell and Brett Kunkel and Tim Barnett? No, any of you can just put on your atheist glasses, your atheist jacket, and say, when I got this on, I'm in that role, and I'm going to do my best to beat you up.
Yeah.
But this is for your benefit.
Right, right.
And you can do that as the Jehovah's Witness or the Mormon, or you just go through the
list.
Sure.
You know, and the reason this is so critical, and I made reference to this earlier, is that there's a video out now, and the video is a video of that was made by someone who is a follower or disciple of Peter Boghossian over at Portland State University. I was up there a couple months ago. Didn't see him.
Yeah.
But that's his stomping grounds, and his enterprise is called Street Epistemology, which strikes me as an odd name. But the point is that he's training atheists to engage theists in a really nice way just by asking questions.
That sounds familiar.
It's like a, you know, tactical training.
Yeah, yeah.
And in this particular video, the atheist has got a GoPro on his shoulder or something like that. So you're really watching from his POV, right? His point of view.
Yeah.
And there's a Christian, two of them there, standing in front. He's having mostly a conversation with the bigger guy. He looks about 19 years old, like a football player type. And he's saying, yeah, he's a Christian, and he's being asked questions about what faith is and what is the justification for the faith that he has in God and the Bible and Jesus, et cetera. And he can't, has nothing to say.
Yeah.
And so the questions are indicting of him, and he's back and forth. Well, I still believe. Well, I just want to ask you this other question. And the atheist is very cordial, and the Christian is just making a mess of it. He doesn't have anything to say. Okay, so this is a 2-part video clip. The next clip is a video that is a kind of video selfie made by that same Christian who is now an atheist.
Yeah.
Making a video to get sent back to the Street Epistemology atheist saying, thank you for helping me break free from Christianity and adopt atheism. Now I'm one of you.
Yeah.
And when it's not only tragic that it happens, Tim, what's in a sense most tragic is the challenge that was given to him by the atheist was so venal. It was so vacuous. It was so basic and simple and almost empty. And he still had nothing to say, and his faith was toppled as a result. This is why we need atheists challenging Christians in a protected environment of youth group.
That's right. And why we do the Rethink events. I mean, this is just, it is so tragic when we see things like this happen. Now, on the other end, I didn't share this story with you. I just got an email yesterday from a principal at a school. And I came in, I forget, maybe I did the atheist role play, did some training and got this email. She said that the parent of the daughter who was in a grade 7-8 class let her know that her daughter was a confessed atheist. And after me visiting, this is prior to Christmas, she said it all made Christianity started to make sense to her.
Oh my goodness.
So
you were playing the atheist. Is that right? Atheist role play.
I'd have to go back, but I know I played the atheist role play in that room at one point. So it's really exciting to see that this apologetic stuff that sometimes gets a bad rap, it has a bad name in some circles. It really works.
That's right.
You know, some people say apologetics doesn't save anybody. That's actually not true. I mean, obviously, properly qualified. The Holy Spirit saves people.
Right.
God saves people. But the Holy Spirit uses all kinds of means to accomplish that.
And apologetics is a noble means. And this is, and we see the apostles using it, and Jesus using it, and the prophets using it. And for goodness sake, why can't we use it?
And it works.
Yeah. People say, well, nobody ever gets argued into the kingdom. And the answer to that is nonsense. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
Happens all the time. I don't know your story, but I know J. Warner Wallace, who sits behind this microphone, he got argued into the kingdom, for example, and there's many others like them. Again, not in isolation for the work of the Spirit. We know that. We acknowledge that. I mean, it's the last item on the 10 points of the Ambassador's Creed is that an ambassador is dependent, and he knows that that what he does is accomplished through the Holy Spirit working through him, you know. But still, the means that God uses is often a good argument. I was thinking we got some callers on board here. Maybe we should just for fun.
Let's see what happens.
Okay. Let's see. We got Randy on board. Oh, my gosh. from Alberta, Canada.
One of my people.
Randy, welcome to the show. Hello, Randy, you're still... Oh, wait a minute. Wait. My bad. Okay, I got to push the...
You got to show me
how... No. That's because I was starting on the left instead of starting on the right. Amy switched the cards on me here. Okay, so we've got Randy from Alberta, Canada now on the air. Randy, welcome on board.
Hello.
Hello, there we go. Got it. Sorry about that.
Hi, Greg. Am I on?
Yes, you are. You are now. Sorry.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, it was all
Amy's
fault.
I just didn't hear you very well, that's all. I have a question for you, but I need to briefly establish a bit of context. I am, of course, a Canadian, and we have a prime minister who is not only head of the Liberal Party of Canada, but he's very liberal in his policies. He frequently does town hall meetings where he answers questions from ordinary folks. He seems to pride himself in giving answers that are inclusive in nature, such as gently correcting one individual who referred to mankind
saying
he preferred the term personkind.
Yes,
because it was inclusive.
I did hear that. Okay? I heard that clip. Yeah,
but his so-called inclusive policy is contradictory, because he's made it clear that to run for office in his party, in order to be an elected representative, you must be pro-choice. Pro-lifers need not apply.
Uh-huh.
So my question then is this. What would be a tactics-oriented way to ask him, if I had the chance, to explain what place his inclusive approach has for people like me, who believe the unborn are precious human persons who ought to be protected by law? Mm-hmm. I don't want him to just relativize the question in such a way that he can quickly dismiss it with a slogan-filled quip and then move on to the next person.
You know,
it seems to me I'd have a once-in-a-lifetime approach opportunity to, in front of the press, to point out the contradiction of his position, and I wouldn't want to drop the ball. Can you offer a carefully constructed way to articulate the question?
You know, Randy, I think you just gave it, actually. I'm listening to you. I know what you're going to ask. I see the list here, your point that Amy wrote out for me, and I'm thinking, there you are, Mr. Prime Minister. You are an inclusive person, right? You value inclusiveness, as I understand it. Now, that's kind of yes or no, and he's going to say yes.
Yeah.
So you're not going to give him the platform back. Yes, I do, of course. Good. Where is a place in your inclusive approach for a person like me who is a pro-lifer, who values the life of unborn children? Where is the place? Okay, see, now there, very quick, pretty much to the point, is basically what you just said to me. That same question, it seems to me, can be put to the Prime Minister or whoever it is that you're speaking to in a public forum after they've already committed themselves directly to the inclusiveness. So you ask the question, it's kind of a, I guess they'd call it a set up and destroy, but it's completely legitimate. You set him up. So you're inclusive. Oh, I'm inclusive. Okay, where is the place for me to be included who has a view, pro-life view, that many Canadians actually hold? Well, if he's only got, now he's stuck, because he's going to have to say, essentially, there is no place for you to be included. And if he says that, then you can justifiably say, then in what sense is your view inclusive?
Yeah.
Is your policy inclusive? Tim, did you have more to add?
Well, it's along the same lines. I would ask something like, does inclusiveness include people who disagree with you or only people who agree with you? I would want to find out what he means by inclusiveness.
Right.
And I think pointing out, man, are you inclusive with just people who agree with you? That's one sense, but I think what he wants to say is no, it includes people that disagree with me. Well, then why is your policies contradictory to that idea?
Right. By the way, the way Tim put it was really helpful. If there's an advantage, the way he put it, for that kind of forum. If I was in a conversation with somebody, we got a lot of time, Randy, I could just say, well, what do you mean by inclusive? So that would be the kind of classic way of putting it in a tactical sense, Columbo number one, all right? So then you have more conversation, okay? But you don't want to give away the floor for somebody to pontificate with an open-ended question. And the way Tim put it, he said, is it either this or this, I think, as I recall.
Does inclusiveness include people who disagree with you Or only people who agree with you.
Yes. Okay, now you've set the categories up and you've confined, and it's a legitimate confining. It's not like a false dichotomy or anything like that. It's not a trick. But it does, it is a maneuver that you would do in conversation that would restrict his ability to get off track. It's either this or it's this, as far as I could say.
And if he chooses the option that he wants to choose in front of everyone, of course I want to include people who disagree with me. Well, then he's going to be stuck, right? Because his policy, I know I'm from Canada, and I remember when he put this into place, hey, you can't be a part of my cabinet, you can't be a part of this Liberal Party if you're a pro-lifer. And that, to me, seems like, okay, that's not inclusive anymore.
Right.
You're excluding a whole group of people, a growing, I think, group of pro-lifers in Canada. Yeah.
Does that help, Randy?
Oh, yeah. Thanks very much.
Yeah. I think you've got a handle on it right from the beginning. You just didn't realize it. So, and what Tim has offered, I think, is really helpful, too. So, hey, thanks for the call, Randy.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye now. You know, I was thinking about this. In one sense, a party is justified in defining its party according to its policies.
Sure.
So I don't think in principle there's a problem with the president saying the people in my party, on my team, in my cabinet have to comport with my underlying political philosophy. That's what distinguishes one party from another.
Sure.
So there's nothing illicit about that. But in this particular case, the claim is to be inclusive, which has a much more broader feel to it. And so what happens is there's kind of rhetorical capital made off the inclusiveness when the policy itself is not inclusive in that sense. And I think it's fair to point out
the inconsistency.
The inconsistency. And keep in mind, and this is not a partisan issue, this kind of point could be made with anyone who is guilty of the same inconsistency.
Sure.
So what we're getting at here now is just the ideas themselves and how they work in conversation. Let's go to Chris in Bellingham. Okay, Chris, you're on. You know, I pushed your button earlier and I meant to push somebody else's. So, but I was mixed up because Amy mixed me up. But anyway,
great. Well, thanks for taking my call, Greg. You know, you've mentored me from afar for many years now. And I really want to appreciate. I really want to say thank you. I really appreciate all that you've done for me and for the family.
You are very welcome. Really, genuinely from my heart. And you're almost a Canadian up there in Bellingham.
I'm pretty close. I can see Canada from my backyard.
Nice.
You know what? This is my first semester at the master's program at Biola University online.
Oh, sweet!
I'm very excited about that.
Good for you.
I gave earlier, well, it was actually late last year, I gave a couple of friends of mine and the pastor where I attend a church on Sunday, I gave them a copy of Tactics.
Okay.
And I did that because I wanted to start showing them some of the ideas, especially the idea of, because it's a smaller group, but when we get together, it's more so for encouragement and for fun.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to reaching our neighborhood, reaching our immediate area.
Uh-huh.
So I wanted to kind of give them some tools to start the process so they can learn how to engage. And everybody seems to love the phrase, you know, putting a stone in someone's shoe.
Uh-huh. Good.
So I recently heard J. Warner Wallace say, stop teaching your kids and start training them.
Right.
Right, because we've been educated to death.
Yeah, and he goes on to characterize exactly what that is, and it's the thing.
Absolutely,
Tim and I have been talking about just the with the atheist role play and equipping and that kind of thing. Right. He's not against teaching per se, but if it's just speaking words at people and you're not giving them and him coming, Jim J. Warner coming from a police background, it's not just chalk talks. You got to go out and you got to do the stuff in a controlled environment, so it becomes part of your muscle memory. So when you're under fire, you know what to do. That's his.
That's right.
His point.
And the pastor is a big baseball fan, and I kind of equated it to the locker room, you know, the dugout,
right?
And teaching, you know, but then we have to get on the field and start putting that, getting that into practice, putting the muscle memory to work,
right?
So I wanted to encourage people, but I wanted to get to know them a little bit better. So I've been interacting with some of the guys at church and just starting to get to know them. I'm just sort of, I've only been going there for a few months. And I'm getting to know them by asking questions. I'm using the Columbo and just asking them. It's all intel. I'm on recon. I'm just gathering intel.
It's so funny because I taught the Columbo tactic the last 2 weekends at a very large church here in Southern California, Calvary Temple, Chino Hills.
I used to attend Chino Hills.
Oh, did you really? Well, see, the thing is I used all that language, and anybody listening into the show now for the first time is going to hear hearing you use the language I did with them, I'm sure, is very encouraging because you're putting it into play in your own community.
Excellent. Yeah, that's great. It was really great. So I actually forwarded the second session to them because I wanted to have them see it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm getting some pushback because I've when you ask people about their Christian convictions, if that's it seems to be a very unusual question to ask at church.
Hmm.
It seems that they're very uncomfortable, and they don't. And the responses I'm getting is that they don't really know what they believe or why.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not unusual.
We see that all the time.
But I can see how it would be discomforting for them if you are kind of poking them in those places, which is a good thing. You're doing them a favor, but I can see how they may not like that.
Absolutely, yes. And again, been an ambassador for many years, so I'm well acquainted with making this more diplomatic as opposed to D-Day.
Mm-hmm, yeah. How can I help you with this, then?
But I have been asked by the pastor, because one guy already, after one conversation, has left the church.
What?
And he asked me to cool it.
Okay, wait. Well, I'm missing something really big here.
Yeah, me too.
So maybe that's the problem. So you getting to know your friends, ask these new people in the church, or you're new to the church, you're asking them questions, and it has to do with their own convictions, and they are faltering, and they can't answer your questions, and that makes at least one person feel so bad that he leaves the church, and so your pastor says, please stop asking people questions about their faith?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. It's. I have been meeting with one of the other guys, and we become very good friends. He goes to that church. He's been there for 7 years. And I've asked him, how many of these guys do you know? He said, you know, fun. I hate to say this, but I don't really know any of these guys. We never really talk much more. You know, we don't talk about spiritual things. We talk about life things and work and. And so I said, well, why don't we just ask them and go around the room, but introduce us, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Find out more about them. And
that was the context in which it created a discomforting situation and the person left?
Well, yeah. And, you know, we've taken a few guys out to coffee and just sort of.
Sure. So let me ask you, though, what is it precisely that the pastor was telling you not to do anymore? I'm still trying to make sense out of this because it sounds to me what you're doing is as a, I take it, a more mature Christian brother reaching out to less mature Christian brothers and trying to encourage them and disciple them in a certain fashion.
Correct.
Why would any pastor?
That's really not my job.
What? It's not a Christian's job to disciple another Christian's?
Right.
Is that pastor have some deep involvement in those people's lives that he's doing the job that thinks you're? Well, then who is supposed to do
that? That has been one of my problems that I see is that it's an hour and a half on Sunday, and then you know he may go visit some people who are in distress throughout the week. But
sure. Well, you know,
there's not a whole lot of
no, of course, and I wouldn't expect the pastor to be discipling every member in his church. It was kind of a, you know, tongue in cheek question. The point is that people need we need each other to encourage and disciple each other. And
amen, yeah.
It only makes sense for a pastor to say, quit doing with that with that other person if he was the one who is already doing it, which he's not. So why is he telling you not to build up that brother in Christ? That's why I keep thinking I'm missing something.
Yeah, well, I think the spiritual maturity there is pretty low.
All right.
Weak.
You're speaking of the pastor?
Pardon?
You're speaking of the pastor there, or are you speaking
of the
other members? Well,
maybe that as well. But
yes.
But I'm speaking about the people that go there,
yeah.
Since the answers I'm getting are pretty, very, very shallow. So when they're being questioned, when they're having these questions asked to them, and they're unfamiliar with the answers, or mm-hmm. They're getting very uncomfortable, and they're starting to complain.
Right. Okay. Well, I cannot speak. I don't know. I'm just going to believe the best for the kind of engagement that you had with these people. I guess it is possible that the way you engaged them was the discomforting thing, and it wasn't just that they didn't know.
I asked the pastor that very question. I said, was I insulting? Was I rude? Was it my personality? Or was it the subject material? Was
right.
it the questions? Was it the style or substance?
Yeah.
And he said, no, I like you. I think you're a great guy. I just think that they're uncomfortable with the questions.
Okay, so, but if he tells you to back off and he says to you, that's not your job, I'll tell you what my response to that is. The problem here is not the people in the church. Every church has people like that. Every single church. The better the church and the better the teaching and the better the spiritual substance in that church, the fewer occasions you're going to have. But every church has that kind of thing. The problem is when you are seeking, and I'm just based on what you've told me so far, okay, maybe other details that I don't have visibility of,
sure.
But you as seeking as a brother to bring encouragement and appropriate challenge and increase spiritual maturity to the lives of other brothers, which attempts make them uncomfortable, and the chief shepherd says, lay off, leave them alone, it ain't your job. And if that's the way it is, then the problem is not with the people, if the problem is with the shepherd. I almost could not believe when I heard that the pastor had said, this is not your job. I mean, I was slack-jawed. What most pastors would love to have people like you, I'd imagine,
yeah.
That are willing to make an investment in other people's lives. This is what they're always talking about, involvement, small groups, discipling
right.
each other. I mean, this is what I hear. So
sure.
Why is somebody saying, hey, lay off? Why? I don't know. I mean, it makes no sense to me, but it's not a good sign. Tim?
What do you think the next
I'm just step? Wondering what Tim's
no,
listening
I,
politely.
Yeah, and I agree with everything you said, Greg, and I would just want to add.
Okay, let's close in prayer.
Yeah. I would just want to add, Chris, just be encouraged that, you know, you are doing the right thing in this situation, that you need to keep discipling the people that you can reach out to. And I don't know in this situation if the pastor says, and Greg, I don't know, what do you think? If the pastor says, you know, you got to back off. Well, I got God's word here, and I got, you know, the pastor of the church.
Yeah.
And you know, God's word says to make disciples, mm-hmm. and we need to be discipling others. So
it all says to respect the elders
right.
over you and all that. So
yeah.
You're kind of in a bind here.
Yeah.
My thinking is, and you're kind of new at the church, right?
Yes.
So you don't have a lot invested there yet.
Yeah.
So you're not
true.
Leaving much behind if you move on, and I don't imagine this is the only church in Bellingham, Washington.
No.
You know, I hate to put it this way, but you might be at the wrong place, because you don't want to do is you don't want to lock horns with the pastor.
Right.
It's just not good. And
right.
And if you have other options, then just quite bow out. And, you know, I hate to put it this way, but the phrase that comes to mind is let the dead bury the dead, you know. And I don't mean that your pastor's spiritually dead and he doesn't know the Lord and he may be doing good things, but on this issue, this is not a good sign that the pastor would react this way. This is turf protection. This is overly autocratic. I'm in charge. This is my thing. Get out of my stuff. I don't exactly completely understand it, but I think you'd be better off, you'd be better served to go to a church that there is not such a tight grip the head pastor is having on his people, and that the people appreciate being challenged in a good way and offered an opportunity to grow. And that seems to me but what you are in a position to offer. I do not think that your efforts are going to be welcome where you're at right now, and you do want to be in an environment where you can grow and use your spiritual capabilities in the life of that local church. All right.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much, Greg.
Oh, you're welcome, Chris. I'm just I appreciate your call. It's painful, Tim, you know, to hear this. And there is this little voice in the back of my head that says, well, maybe you're not getting the full picture. And I don't mean that Chris is misleading, but, you know, maybe there's some other mitigating factors and whatever. But just taken at face value, it's painful for me to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish more churches were open to what we're doing. It's actually surprising, this call, because whenever I have given tactics, and it might be the most popular talk that I give out of all my material, you know, science is up there. But recently, it seems like every series I do, if there's multiple talks, tactics is in there, usually at the end. And the people in the pew and the pastor, they just love it. And it's so simple, and yet it's something that they hadn't really thought of doing. You know, oh, this is clever. Put a stone in someone's shoe. Yeah. People love that. Bloom where you're planted. And then here's this really easy game plan that gets everybody into play. Doesn't matter how shy you are or how little you think you know, all this stuff. And you know, I'm rehearsing what you've taught me here. And it's so true, though. Anyone can use it works.
Yeah.
It really does.
I wonder in this situation if the problem using tactics presumes a desire to make a difference that you're not able to make with the techniques that or the training that you've already been given.
Yeah.
So when you have people who are trying to make a difference and are stonewalled or they don't know how to get into a conversation, but they want to, then tactics is an answer to a problem they know they have. But if you have people who are not really very well-versed in their own convictions enough to even be willing to step out and care about the person who doesn't know, well, then the tactics doesn't speak to a need that they're feeling. And I'm wondering if that's what was going on in this situation. The people didn't really care that much. And now this guy's asking me questions I can't answer and trying to get me to do something I really don't want to do.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was involved there or not.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. But with regards to the applicability, you know, when I was speaking last weekend at Chino Hills, this is my second weekend, right after the worship set, as I'm getting ready to be introduced, the worship leader stepping down, and he grabs me. We're all saying hi to everybody, you know, and so the worship leaders are exiting, and one of the worship people grabs me and he said, I have bought so many copies of Tactics to give it to so many people because it's been so helpful. It was a great vote of confidence. Here, I'm about to get up at the stage.
Yeah.
And what I do characteristically now when I teach on this is I tell the people, I'm going to make a prediction here. And the prediction I'm going to make is that some of you in the audience are going to look back to this seminar, this weekend, what we're doing here, this time, this date, as a turning point for you, because after today, for you, everything will change with regards to engaging productively with people who don't share our convictions for the kingdom. And that's because I'm going to give you this tool. And the reason that I can say this is not because I'm trying to blow my own horn or anything like that. It's because I've had so many people that have said to me this very thing. You know, this book has changed my life. And I'm not surprised because the materials there, the approach there in the tactics book changed my ability to engage effectively and winsomely and attractively and maneuver in circumstances I didn't think I'd be able to maneuver in. And it continues to do so. Mm-hmm. And the feedback I continue to get from people now, like when I do events like this, is, wow, this is just, I never thought about this. This really opens up all new vistas for me. So I'm thrilled about, you know, about this person, what was his name, Chris?
Yeah.
And his, you know, his excitement about passing the material on. It's not always going to be well received. You know, I looked on Amazon at some of the comments. Occasionally I do that. And there are not too many bad comments, but every once in a while you get one, and I look at it. Again, this is not my habit because then I just kind of get bugged.
Sure.
But this one person said, we felt this was all manipulative. As Christians, this is manipulative, and that this is not an appropriate way to engage people. And I was just reading yesterday or the day before yesterday in the Gospel of Luke, and there was Jesus using these questions. And in fact, I was reading a challenge with a question that I had not recalled as a question. I can recall a bunch of them, but it turns out there's a whole bunch of times.
Yeah.
When Jesus uses this kind of approach.
Well, this is what's interesting about it. It's not Greg Kokel's approach. I mean, this goes back to how Jesus operated.
Right.
Someone did the count on how many times Jesus asked questions, how many times he answered questions. Uh-huh. And he asked almost double the number of questions he answered. Now, this is a curious question. How is it that I think the most brilliant person who ever walked the earth asked more questions than he answered.
Oh.
Why is he asking all these questions? Well, it turns out it wasn't because he didn't know a bunch of stuff.
Right.
It's because he's trying to get people to think within their own worldview, within their own hearts about certain issues. Mm-hmm. That's what he did. And it turns out that when people are more likely to think and change their mind on things, when they come to some realization within their own heart and mind, mm-hmm. rather than me just saying, just do it. Just change your mind on
right,
this. Believe
right,
God exists.
Right, right.
Well, if I can get you to think about God's existence in maybe a way you hadn't before, and then you arrive at that mm-hmm. that idea, well, you're more likely to accept it.
Yeah. And the questions are meant to get that process going. So
that's
there's
right.
a matter of self-discovery. And I think that when certain kinds of questions, even clarification questions,
yeah.
what do you mean by that? How'd you come to that conclusion? Even those kinds of questions elicit oftentimes what I tell the audience is what I call the Simon and Garfunkel response, you know, the
yeah.
sounds of silence. Because people say things or offer what appear to be conclusions on things they haven't thought through or haven't concluded.
Yeah.
They're just repeating what they've heard. So anyway, there's our music and Fast First Hour here with my buddy Tim Barnett.
It's been
fun. Sharing the microphone with me. And I want to thank you for being part of the show as well. Greg Kokel with Tim Barnett for Stand to Reason. Give him heaven this week, friends. Bye-bye now.